Today, a historic day for America. Donald Trump is finally booted out to make way for President Joe Biden. Guardian columnist Professor Robert Reich is an economist who has served in US administrations stretching back to the 70s. He was Labour Secretary under Bill Clinton and later advised Barack Obama. So he's seen a lot, but nothing quite like this. Can you remember a more tumultuous Inauguration Day?
Oh, no, there is certainly not an inauguration in my memory. I don't think since 1861, just before the Civil War, when Abraham Lincoln was sworn in, that there is an inauguration that is as fraught. I mean, because remember, it was just days ago that the Capitol was stormed.
To protect the Constitution of the United States against enemies, foreign and domestic!
And as a result, you have an atmosphere that is very fragile.
This morning, Washington on alert. Thousands of armed National Guardsmen are patrolling the Capitol grounds, at times surrounded by a 7-foot fence topped with razor wire. Streets are peppered with military vehicles and security checkpoints.
Dystopian images of 20,000 military personnel in Washington, D.C. provide perhaps a fitting backdrop for the final hours of a presidency that has repeatedly shocked the world. Donald Trump is unlikely to ever concede defeat, nor will his supporters, who are ready to protest. But he will have to go today to make way for the 46th president of the United States, Joe Biden, who inherits a country that is deeply divided. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, the end of Donald Trump's presidency and the beginning of a new era under Joe Biden. Robert, you worked at the heart of government in the US for many years, in different administrations. It's the day of Joe Biden's inauguration, the day we know he's been waiting for his whole life. How relieved are you that it's finally arrived?
Well, I can't express the degree of relief I have. I mean, we've had some bad presidents in the United States. I mean, James Buchanan, for example, was one of the worst. Andrew Johnson, both in the 19th century. Warren G. Harding was a particularly bad president in the first decades of the 20th century, a very corrupt administration. Richard Nixon, some would say, and many would say George W. Bush. But we have never had a president who is a scoundrel, who lies and is as cruel, as narcissistic, as divisive as Donald Trump. And so I think the nation, even those who have been Trump supporters, will in some sense breathe a sigh of relief.
Biden will obviously want to set out his vision, and we'll come to that. But I think it's fair to say that first, there is a lot of unfinished business linked to the former administration, including those terrible scenes in the Capitol building earlier this month. How should Joe Biden handle Donald Trump?
Well, I think Joe Biden has got to leave it to Congress to impeach and convict Donald Trump. He's already been impeached by the House. The Senate has to convict him. I think Joe Biden needs to allow that process to go forward. Clearly, Biden would rather get his people in his cabinet and his sub-cabinet confirmed as quickly as possible. That's understandable. It's possible for the Senate to do both at the same time or nearly the same time. But that's very, very critically important business. You can't move on. It's very important in terms of accountability, and not as a matter of punishing Donald Trump, but as a matter of holding him and everyone else who was involved and enabled the storming of the Capitol, the lies, the seditious behavior, to be held fully accountable.
We've just witnessed a truly solemn moment in American history. The House of Representatives has reached the threshold for making Donald J. Trump the only president of the United States to be impeached for a second time.
I mean, can you explain, though, why there is a need for impeachment when Trump is going this week anyway? What will it mean for him to be impeached?
Well, first of all, the only way that Congress can prevent him from running again in 2024 would be through impeachment and conviction by the Senate. The Constitution of the United States is fairly clear about that, a president can be impeached, and the judgment in cases of impeachment, and I'm reading actually right now from Section 3 of the Constitution of the Article 1, it says, the Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments, and judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal of office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. And preventing Donald Trump from running again is important. It's important not only symbolically, it's important even if he decides not to run again, it's important because his hold over the Republican Party, even if he's removed as a candidate, he's still going to have a large hold over the Republican Party. But if he can maintain that possibility that he will run again, that hold is even greater.
I love that you've got the Constitution right there.
Well, it is. You know, I carry it around with me in my pocket. I mean, that sounds a little odd, but the Constitution of the United States is a very short document. It's easily readable, and I find it very convenient to kind of pull it out of my pocket and refer to it.
And on the impeachment, obviously, the House of Representatives have voted to impeach Donald Trump based on a simple majority. There is now a higher bar in the Senate. There needs to be a two-thirds vote there. It seems to me that Biden wants to keep this process at an arm's length. And I'm just wondering why that is. Is it because of his message of unity? Or is it because of what he's seen in his decades in Congress, including two impeachments, Nixon and Clinton, as well as Trump's first one?
I think Joe Biden wants to stay above the fray, and he's done it remarkably well through all of these tumultuous weeks and months. He knows that the only possibility of creating any sense of unity or even peeling off some of the Trump supporters to support Biden and support the country as a whole is if he stays above the fray. And so he certainly doesn't want to get involved in that impeachment process.
Do you know Joe Biden?
I've met him, yes.
What's he like?
He seems very personable, very kind, empathic. I would say the overused adjective, I'd use nice. he's not an intellectual heavyweight. He's a politician, but he's not a politician who carries his ego on his sleeve. Now, there are a lot of politicians, and I'm sure you know this. I mean, in the United States, to actually run for president, let alone become president and win, to even enter the ring, you've got to be a little bit of a pathological narcissist. But Joe Biden has never struck me that way. He's a very humble man.
And as he comes to power, there's a lot more than just the storming of the Capitol and impeachment that is still lingering when it comes to Donald Trump. There are the impact of 4 years in power. How has Donald Trump changed America? And will Joe Biden immediately unwind some of the more damaging policies?
Well, Biden intends right away to reverse, unwind the most damaging executive orders from Trump.
Getting America back in the Paris Climate Accords, reversing the Muslim ban, promising to find a way to reunite those children who had been separated from their parents at the border. All of those things, things that Biden spoke about on the campaign trail and now hoping to put into action.
He will also, slightly slower track, undo and reverse some of the regulatory rollbacks and some of the regulatory changes. I think Biden will do whatever he can to change the conversation, the tenor of political life in America. That's a much harder one. To change the culture that Trump kind of exploited. I mean, the financial crisis kind of confirmed in many people's view, both on the left and the right, that the game was rigged against them. I think in fact it is. But the right-wing response to that rigging was to deepen and intensify its hate of government and its paranoia about there being a vast conspiracy. Hillary Clinton talked about the vast right-wing conspiracy that she encountered when she was first lady and then when she ran for office. Again, it was all there. It was a kind of a tinderbox. What Donald Trump did was light the flame. And he did it, we all know, through incendiary rhetoric, through inflammatory rhetoric and deeds that really did exacerbate every division in the United States. He exacerbated the two Americas. And that's what we have now. And that's what Joe Biden has desperately to put together. It's going to be very hard.
It's day one of his presidency, and it's very clear for all the focus on Trump that the priority facing Biden right now is the pandemic and its impact on America. How bad is the situation he inherits?
Well, the situation is awful. I mean, it's indescribably awful.
Of the more than 126,000 people hospitalized nationwide, nearly 21,000 are in California, where healthcare workers are begging for help.
You know, our hospitals are filling up. There is a lack of, in Los Angeles, a lack of oxygen, even for the emergency intensive care units. People are scared. The virus is taking so many lives. Almost everybody is being touched by it. Donald Trump didn't care. I mean, he really didn't care. He wanted to be reelected. That's where he spent his time. And in pursuit of reelection, he played down the coronavirus. He played down masks. He played down anything that the Centers for Disease Control in Washington tried to do. Some people are beginning to get vaccinations, but the rollout of the vaccine under the Trump administration has been a dismal failure. And so Biden has got to move and is committed to move extremely fast.
And as well as being a massive health crisis, the pandemic across the world and in America, of course, has turned into an economic crisis. You were Labour Secretary in Clinton's first administration. How worried are you about the state of the economy right now? How long could this downturn be?
Well, the downturn is very serious. It's on the scale of the Great Depression of the 1930s. There are some economists who are optimistic that once the coronavirus is behind us, there's so much pent-up demand that many businesses will be going full speed ahead and will be hiring people like mad to deal with that demand. I'm not quite as sanguine. I think that so many people have been out of work for so long that it's going to be very hard for them to get back into work. So many people have lost their jobs permanently. There are so many small businesses that have closed permanently. The bottom half, at least, of the population has no money at all, has exhausted their savings, whatever savings they had. They obviously need a lot, but they are not going to have the wherewithal to buy anything.
If you were advising Biden right now, what would you be suggesting?
I would advise Joe Biden to go big and bold, to come up with a plan for investment in the future of the country that would include infrastructure, you know, roads and bridges and internet and wind and solar energy, turbines and so on, that would include a complete revamping of the education system, world-class kindergarten through 12th grade education, early childhood education, including child care for the very, very youngest children, and access to university. Also, healthcare, a public health investment. Our public health system has been shown to be, just way, way behind what is necessary for any kind of crisis, but also so many people without health care, without any access to a doctor. All of this, all of these investments, and they are investments in the future, they need to be done. And I would sell it to the country as exactly that, that it is not a burden on future generations. This is not just increasing the debt. This is actually a help to future generations. This is what future generations need as a percentage of the total economy. It will help grow the economy and therefore bring down the debt.
We have to act, and we have to act now. Tonight, I'll lay out my first step, the American Rescue Plan, that will tackle the pandemic and get direct financial assistance and relief to Americans who need it the most.
Do you think his $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief proposal suggests that he is going to think big and that we will see policies like that?
I hope so, yes. I was encouraged by that. But remember, that proposal, $1.9 trillion, is for coronavirus relief. It is for a short-term stimulus. It is all necessary. It is good. But it doesn't go nearly far enough in terms of what I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting really is a restructuring of the economy in a way that gets people jobs, but also so many jobs that wages begin to rise once again. So that you fight inequality as well as creating jobs, as well as restructuring the economy.
Coming up, the pressure that Joe Biden will come under from the left. Lots of what you're talking about, bold economic policies, a focus on inequality, are the type of policies that progressive Democrats want to see, people who backed Biden to oust Trump but are politically to his left. They can see that Biden has an opportunity now that he's taken a wafer-thin advantage in the Senate. But many have been a bit disappointed by his cautious cabinet appointments. How tough will it be to deal with pressure from that wing of his party?
There is an absolute conviction on the left that they must push Biden and his administration if anything that they believe in is going to get done. I mean, Medicare, for example, Medicare for all, universal health care, Biden has said he doesn't want Medicare for all. He doesn't want an entirely new universal health care system. He wants to improve the Affordable Care Act, that is Obamacare. He wants to provide a public option so that anybody can opt into it, but they don't have to. That means that the entire system is going to be a very expensive system. Already, the United States is spending about 18% of its entire economy on healthcare, more than anybody else in the world, and getting the least for it of all advanced countries. I mean, we still have 30 million people without any health insurance. We still have a terrible rate of mortality. And that's particularly true with regard to the poor, people of color. I think the left is going to push very, very hard to have the Biden administration move as far as it possibly can toward a single payer, which would be much more efficient, and universal health care. On the environment, the Biden administration and Joe Biden himself looks like it's going to be a very environmentally friendly, it's going to fight climate change, but it has not adopted what many on the left are calling a Green New Deal. That is a huge expenditure for jobs and the building of a brand new carbon neutral infrastructure. And I think there's going to be a lot of pushing on that as well. I think that the left understands something that I certainly have learned from my years in Washington, and that is you can have very good people in Washington. You can have extremely publicly interested people in Washington, but nothing good happens unless there is public pressure from the outside, because the forces of the status quo particularly given all the money that comes in from big corporations and from big banks and from very wealthy individuals. All of that money into campaigns, into lobbying, into trying to influence public opinion, you have to have countervailing pressure if anything good is going to happen.
And how much will it help that after the wins in Georgia, there are now 50 Democratic senators alongside 50 Republicans?
Well, the good news is that he does have effectively control over Congress. And with Kamala Harris as vice president casting the deciding vote in the Senate, it means that the Democrats do control the committees, they control the agenda, and that all is going to make it much easier than if Mitch McConnell, for example, had continued to be the Senate Majority Leader and the Republicans maintain control. Now, having said that, the downside is that you still need, for most legislation, at least 60 votes, unless it's concerning issues of taxation, in which case a mere majority will do. The other point to keep in mind is that there are some very conservative Democrats. Joe Manchin from West Virginia exemplifies the conservative wing of the Democratic Party. Joe Biden can't get very much done, even on a 51 majority vote, even with Kamala Harris casting her vote, if Joe Manchin and a few others who are also very conservative Democrats don't want to move in that direction. So Biden, at the very least, has to bring those conservative Democrats along.
America's back. We keep our commitments to our allies. We know the difference between our adversaries and our friends.
If you listen to Joe Biden, it does feel a little bit like he's telling Americans that they can wind back time.
I think the nation is looking for us to be united, much more united. We don't have to have this kind of this politics to become so sort of dirty and vicious and
almost as if they could all pretend the last 4 years never happened. He can put America straight back on track. How do you respond to that?
I think that's unrealistic. It's unrealistic on many grounds. I mean, the antecedents of Trumpism, if that's what we call it, were there years and years before Trump. If you're talking about racism, you go back to the 17th century. We can make progress. We can reverse the kind of regressive tendencies that Trump aggravated, but we can't simply go to some bright, shining place that really was not even there before Trump. I think Biden needs to be careful that he doesn't create expectations that are completely unrealistic. He's done that with the coronavirus. I mean, he and his people have been very clear with America about how bad it is going to get before it gets good again. He probably needs to do that with all aspects of this country. In terms, even the divisiveness, he can't paper it over. He can't pretend that Trump didn't happen. Trump did happen. The racism and xenophobia and ugliness that Trump elicited, encouraged from America, again, was there before Trump, but it's worse. It's clearly worse now. And the way you deal with that is you recognize it.
Professor Robert Reich, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Robert Reich, Professor of Public Policy at the University of California at Berkeley. He writes regularly for The Guardian. You can read his columns on the website. Do also follow all the reporting today from Guardian US, including from our Washington DC bureau and other reporters across America, as well as on our live blog. That is it from us. This episode was produced by Elizabeth Cassin and exec'd by Mithali Rao. Sound design was by Axel Cocutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.